And we'll start out with an update to a tragic story out of Brampton. This is the one that, if you use the 410 for your morning commute, may have thrown a wrench into your plans this morning. The roads have long since opened, of course, and police have finally given us details on what exactly happened at those two crime scenes this morning. The first was a house in Brampton near Williams Parkway, where just before 6 o'clock, cops found a 53-year-old woman and her 13-year-old son stabbed. The mom was pronounced dead at the scene, while the son later died in hospital. Shortly after that attack, though, a second crime scene. They say a man was found dead on the 410 near Williams Parkway, so really not too far away. That man has been identified as a 51-year-old who was the father of the boy and the husband to the woman, and police say he did, in fact, take his own life.
The victims in this incident did reside at this residence as a family and have been here for quite some time.
Peel Police Constable Danny Martini just updating the media moments ago. She says the call for help came from inside the home, but what she wouldn't say is who else was inside.
We have not and are not releasing the names of the individuals involved. It is at the request because of the trauma that is going on around this situation. It is a lot, and we are really looking to respect their wishes so that they can process and deal with the aftermath of this. Remember that we have people that have just lost two parents and a young sibling.
Now, as they painted the picture of this family, just the story becomes so much more tragic. We know the parents had four children in all. Two of them are grown and are adults, and there's still no indication of why the husband did this in the first place. But it is definitely just a horrible story, all told.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, tragic, and you got to think about the other members of the family that are still around that have to put the pieces of this tragedy together. I mean, it starts with the question as to why, but there's a lot of work to be done after.
There's a lot of work to be done afterwards, but the question why is huge, and not just in the specifics of this case, but we're seeing more and more and more of these. And so, you know, I would ask, like, why? What is driving people? What is the despair that is driving people to do this kind of thing? You know, I mean, maybe it happened 20 years ago. I wasn't paying attention.
No, I don't think it happened at this rate. I think you're onto something.
I don't think it happened at this rate.
That.
And yeah. So there's something, right? There is something that's happened, you know, and it's probably a culmination of a lot of things.
Yeah.
But, you know, people are isolated. Social media isolates you. You're not, you know, in touch with your community as much. People don't go to church anymore. There's, you know, all this stuff. And I just wonder if we have to look again systemically at you know, a lot of different things, and there'll be no way to solve this problem, I think, but at least understand it.
It's interesting you bring up the community aspect of it, because a reporter, James Moore, was in the area this morning, and he talked to several different neighbors, and one of them in particular, sort of, she had mentioned she was still grappling with the whole loss in the entirety of the situation, but she said, you know, I'm sort of disappointed that I didn't reach out and offer help more often, being a neighbor in that community and get to know them a little bit better.
I don't really know my neighbors. You know, I'll be honest, I don't really, I mean, I know the people that live, I live in a condo building, and I know the people that I see in the elevator to say hello and that sort of thing, but I don't really know the people that live around me. I mean, we live in a different world than we did, you know, years ago.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, full disclosure, I do a lot of work with an organization. They've got a big event coming up next month that deals with getting to know people. Right. And they, you know, we spend a weekend, it's called the Genwell Project. We do a weekend twice a year where you go out and organize community events and you get to know people. I can tell you firsthand, having, you know, lived in the Mississauga, Brampton area, I've door knocked in political campaigns back in the day in Brampton. That has got to be one of the most isolated communities there is out there, because you've got these massive streets with huge homes that, you know, everybody's out in the backyard, not in the front porch. There's not a lot of that. You drive into your driveway, you go inside your front door, you don't talk to a lot of people. So if you are going through something, if you are having a hard time, there's not a lot there. And that becomes, you know, it might sound small, but that's a big part of it. And you talk about the social media isolation where you feel...
Loneliness is this thing. Even you can be in a house full of people and still feel lonely. And I mean, I think, you know, it's important for people to get over the stigma that it's that, you know, I can't go talk to someone about this. I can't get therapy. I can't. We hear this often, but man, it could save lives.
Yeah, and really, you know, the social media part is really interesting because at some point you feel like you're connected, but it's not real.
Oh, it's not real.
You know, and that's part of the problem, right? You don't feel, and again, we're talking about the bigger issues here, not this story in particular, but a lot of underlying issues often lead to those type of things.
Yeah, it's true. How many of those friends and followers you have on Facebook and Twitter are actually friends?
Are going to bring you soup when you're sick.
Yeah,
think about it that way.
Yeah. I get birthday notices, and I'm like, I'm not even sure who that person
is. I got over 1,000 birthday notices. I don't know. I don't think I've even met 1,000 people in my life. That's not true. But, you know, like still.
You're the only guy that might have in this room.
That's true.
Met 1,000 people.
But it, I mean, and it's lovely. It's nice to be acknowledged in that way. But again, you know, they're not going to come tuck me in at night.
No,
you
it's
know?
True.
And, you know, when you talk about Brampton, there are a lot of different cultures in that neck of the woods. That can be part of the isolation as well. The experience of coming to a new country, even if you're second, third generation, it can be tough to
and you know what? Maybe,
fit in.
Maybe you feel uncomfortable approaching somebody and going up and saying, hi, I'm new here and I want to get involved. I mean, yeah, you're maybe that is it. We don't know, you know, this family exactly where they're from, if they're new Canadians, how long they've been in Brampton. The police had indicated they'd been in the house for several years, a lengthy amount of time anyway. And so, you know, did they feel comfortable approaching their neighbors? And you know, was there that sort of
I mean, I think these the things we want to talk about are the big picture issues that are, I think, overriding all this, not the specifics of this case. Yeah.
Let's move on to the Jazz Festival because there's still more fallout of this story.
Yeah, this is a story you heard first here on News Talk 1010. It was an exclusive. The story of a man who was stabbed 4 times in the chest during last month's Beaches Jazz Festival. He lived... by the stroke of luck, the man who randomly stabbed him was eventually arrested, charged with attempted murder. The suspect, 19-year-old Michael Jobe, released on bail under several strict conditions. Those include house arrest, having to be with his family at all times, no contact with the victim, not to be within 500 meters of the victim, and no weapons at all. Now, the length of time he's been held in custody means nothing, according to our legal expert, Ed Prucci.
Whether they're in custody for 3 minutes, 3 weeks, or 3 years, that's not because they've done anything wrong. That's because either the system or the individual themselves has said, I need more time, or the system needs more time in order to schedule the bail hearing before they can actually have a judge or justice of the peace hear the legal arguments necessary to determine bail. So the time period isn't really a relevant one, right? It doesn't matter how long he's been in custody for.
But just the fact that he's out on bail is something that isn't sitting really well with the victim. Dylan Cann spoke to News Talk 1010, and he says he was told a day after the bail hearing was held that he's been out.
I didn't think that he would get bail due to, you know, the severity of the charges. And I'm definitely not happy about it and definitely concerned considering this guy lives just a couple minutes away from me.
Now, he says he's still dealing with some physical pain, but we talk about mental anguish, and it's mostly the mental anguish that Dylan Cann is dealing with now that the suspect is out on bail.
I'm definitely worried. I'm considering going away for a little while.
Imagine that. I mean, you're thinking of leaving the city just because somebody has been released on bail. Now, they are strict conditions. The suspect has 3 sureties he has to respond to, essentially living under house arrest, you know, has to stay away from the victim at all times. So they are pretty strict, but...
But how strict? I mean,
how strict are the police going to be in monitoring this?
I mean, and how do you really ensure that all that happens? He's living down the street from him. They try and go to the bus at the same time. They try, you know, who knows? I mean, you know, if I was Dylan Cann, I'd be beyond upset by this because not only is he physically scarred, not only is he not able to make a living now because as the clips, and I mean, I found those clips chilling that we listened to earlier when he talked about how the muscles in his chest were cut through and he's a roofer. How is he going to make a living after this? So, I mean, eventually he'll be able to get back to work. But in the short term, this guy is out of work. Scarred, sitting there, and the scars are not just physical, you know, and I've said this several times already, but...
One of his buddies who witnessed it today, I mean, called in to the show, witnessed the incident itself,
was with him when it happened.
He said, you know, listen, I'm still shaken, and I didn't get stabbed.
Mm.
And he said, you know, if I were him, I would leave town too. I can't blame the guy.
Yeah, I mean, he was out at an event, you know, a notable event in
like
the city.
All of us have been.
Exactly.
And you see, this is, you know, when I heard him speak, you know, I just thought, this is you, this is me, this is any of us. And you know, it shouldn't be that shock. I mean, this is who victims of random violence are. It's you, me, it's, you know, it's anyone in the city. But to hear the tone of his voice, to hear all that as he's just walking down Queen Street, you know, walking his dog, it to me was chilling.
Now, talking to our legal expert, of course, he's a criminal defense lawyer, so he's going to take the stand or take the position of defending the suspect in this case, and he says there is the presumption of innocence in Canada under our law, that's something that you have to factor in as well.
I think that's unfair, though. I don't think Ed is defending the suspect here. I think he's defending...
Well, he's defending the overall picture of this. Somebody
he's
getting
defending
bailed.
The system. The system has, you know, a belief of innocence before guilt, and that is fair. That's what everybody would want for themselves. The problem becomes whether or not we are too lenient when it comes to violent crimes and bail, and whether or not we have to have a different onus put on the accused when it comes to these type of crimes. And that's up to a debate, I think we're at that point.
And I will say that if I got arrested, Ed Prucci is the first person I'm calling. So
he is good at what he does. But
I may or may not have his card in my wallet.
Just in case.
At all times.
Late night calls to
phone number tattooed on your forehead.
Sometimes I just call, hey, Ed, it's Ryan. Hey, what's wrong? Nothing. I'm just testing.
Yeah, that's right. Making sure this number still works.
Still in service. Excellent. Go back to sleep.
He did admit he didn't know the ins and outs of this case and the particulars of it. So he was just commenting in general for sure.
Let's talk a little bit more about JWR.
Good old Jody Wilson-Raybould back in the news. Conservative leader Andrew Scheer officially called for the RCMP to get involved with the Prime Minister's handling of the SNC-Lavalin file. He made those comments after the Ethics Commissioner released a report saying the PM broke the Conflict of Interest Act. Now, Jody Wilson-Raybould has come out with a statement saying, yeah, I've already been in contact with the RCMP. That's surprising. She told CTV she was in contact with the Mounties back in the spring when this story first broke. She says she hasn't talked to officers since the Ethics Commissioner's report was released, though, and it needs to be said that just because the RCMP talked to her doesn't mean there's an active investigation of the Prime Minister underway. According to the Conflict of Interest Act, had the RCMP been investigating, the Ethics Commissioner would have had to suspend his investigation. So that's proof that they're not actively investigating the PM. But that's not to say that they may be putting together a file.
Yeah, and they should be putting together a file. The guy just continues.
I had a feeling you'd say
this guy is—he's the author of his own criticisms at this point. Because if you want to walk around the country and pretend that that we're all a bunch of idiots, first of all, and second of all, take no accountability for your own actions, you're going to get harassed and harangued about this from now until well past October, when you're likely back in office.
And that's the thing, because I don't think that this is going to have an effect. I mean, I think we have become so polarized. And I'll tell you, the text board today is a prime example of that. Mm-hmm. There are people that are texting in right now. I'm not sitting in front of it right now, but earlier I saw, you know, you're all like Scheer, a bunch of losers. You're all like Trudeau, a bunch of losers. We're getting, you know, it's so polarized out there that no matter what happens, no matter how many times Andrew Scheer looks Justin Trudeau in the face and says, you know, whatever it was that he said to him, you gotta stop lying to Canadians, it's not going to change anybody's mind.
No,
people are already made up.
The more he's real about it, though, and again,
he's got to be authentic.
I have no horse in the race, but today, I don't know if you saw, Dave, when Andrew Scheer kind of pulled the Prime Minister in, they had a little exchange. He said, stop lying to Canadians.
Yes.
You know, you got to come clean. And the Prime Minister, of course, did nothing and said, oh, it's a good day. He's a good day.
And said,
Andrew Scheer had a flag,
pig.
Too. Yeah. He was waving was that a Canadian flag? Or?
It was an Acadian flag.
Oh, okay.
It's Acadia Day. Don't you know? Come on.
Of course.
I like that kind of stuff from him. That's the first time I saw him, you know, kind of get ballsy with it. Okay, yeah, now that's real. If I really felt that way about somebody and then I said it to their face, that resonates with people. That was that was a good move on his part. And he's got to get away from that over-scripted politician that people see him as.
But you're right. And we've been talking about this in the newsroom, that the divisiveness of politics has become to the point where those who are on the right are going to stay on the right and they're going to vote to the right no matter what happens. Those who are on the left are going to do the exact same thing. It seems the middle is gone, or at least it's been muddied.
Nuance is gone. And so now it's like sports. You know, you're either a Habs fan or a Maple Leafs fan. And no matter what, even, you know, the Maple Leafs get knocked out of the playoffs, you're not going to root for the Habs. You are still a Maple Leafs fan. And it's just that polarized now. And it's not great for democracy.
I'm a fan of democracy. Like, I don't have a horse in the NHL. I like hockey. For me, I like democracy. So, for me, I'm rooting for a good outcome for democracy.
Yeah, but
my democracy t-shirt.
You are the last man standing.
I might be. Yeah. Got a briefcase and just standing on a pile of molten rock. Ryan Doyle, Richard Krause with you here on The Rush this afternoon. Dave Bradley is in for Dave McKee with his views on the news. Metrolink's in the news.
Yeah, and this is something that's often spoken about in hushed tones. Organizations don't want to report it at all, but Metrolink's is taking a different approach when it comes to the topic of suicide. Spokesperson Anne-Marie Aiken says they're going to try and encourage people to talk about it.
We're all bravely going into this the conversation to try and make a difference. But we also know it can be upsetting for people to hear about it. And so one of the things that we always make sure that we talk about whenever we talk about suicide is that it's important for people to reach out for support.
In the first 4.5 months of this year, the Provincial Transit Agency says they've had to deal with a year's worth of suicides already in 2019. So now that Metrolink is taking that step, what about the TTC? We checked in with them as well.
We've recently done some looking into ways we could potentially modify the physical environment of the station to help deter suicide. We also, you know, look at different organizations that help people in crisis or emotional distress.
And something interesting, too, spokesperson Haley Waldman says this year they've started training janitors about intervention and mental health and suicide awareness to try and help as many people as possible. So just anybody who's in the station can spot somebody in distress and say, can I help?
This has never made much sense to me. The idea that, you know, we work for a company that promotes talk and communication around things like depression and anxiety and mental health issues. Yet the reality of the outcome sometimes is not discussed. As you say, it's talked about in hushed tones. I think this is a bold, fresh approach from this transit agency to finally get it out of the shadows, to say, listen, we need to be more proactive. Yep. We need to promote discourse and dialogue about this type of issue that does go on, because we all know it does.
Yeah, and I was saying earlier when we were talking about, you know, these murder-suicides that we've been hearing about, people are often afraid either to reach out and get help, or they don't know how to reach out and get help. And, you know, the more that we can let people know that it's okay to phone. And sometimes all it takes is a phone call. Sometimes, you know, you just need a moment to get some perspective, you know, and you know, follow up and get some more help. But a phone call can save a life, you know. And so, yeah, absolutely. The more information that gets disseminated about this, the better.
And we've been trying to break down that barrier in the newsroom as well for the last several months, maybe a year. We've had the conversation in the newsroom amongst ourselves, and it had often been reported as a police investigation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When something is, roads are closed, the subway stops.
Someone was tired and emotional.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, now we've sort of broken down that barrier and we say exactly what it is. Sometimes the police don't want to say it, or they'll just be like, well, you guys aren't going to report on this because it's this. And I'm like, no, this is, you know, this is a perfectly good reason as to why people are stuck in traffic, and we can mention it.
Well, and I think, and the more that we talk about it, the more we normalize it, the more that we make people understand that, you know, if you suffer from depression or if you have, you know, issues that you are trying to deal with, that you're not alone, that this is something that affects people, that this is something that it's not just you, because I think so often people feel that it's just them. I'm alone. I'm the only one in the world that feels like this. And if we make it known that they're not, it can only help.
And I don't know why it went sort of into the background. I think there was some talk that, you know, they worried about copycats and people thinking, wow, that's a great idea. I'm gonna give that
a shot.
I think
that's old school thinking,
I think you're right.
It feels very old-timey to me.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Jeffrey Epstein. No real clarity here, although there's supposed to be.
Yeah, speaking of suicide, it doesn't really settle anything. He was found dead in his cell at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in New York City back on August 10th. It left many people to wonder just how such a high-profile prisoner known for socializing with people like Donald Trump and Bill Clinton could have gone unwatched in that cell. The medical examiner now today says his death has been confirmed a suicide by hanging. Epstein reportedly used a bedsheet. He was charged with sexually abusing numerous underage girls over several years and placed on suicide watch last month after he was found on his cell floor with bruising on his neck. That was back on July 23rd. Multiple people familiar with operations at the jail say he was taken off the watch after about a week, put back in a high-security housing unit where he was less closely monitored but still supposed to be checked on every 30 minutes. Some conspiracy theorists still believe there's something really suspicious at play here.
Don't call them conspiracy theorists because I don't want to be in that club.
Let me hand you your tinfoil hat,
well,
sir.
Well, you have
the fact coming from the medical examiner. Okay. It's suicide by hanging.
Sure it is.
Well, just saying.
I'm not a 9/11 was an inside job guy.
You don't have to be.
But you have too many powerful people in this particular case. You have too many safeguards in place.
It's too messy, right?
It's too messy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem here.
Too many people have too much to lose here. And I hate, oh my God, I hate to hear myself talk like this.
So do I. Because it does sound
like a conspiracy theory, or it sounds like an episode of Law and Order or something like that.
The guards fell asleep and the cameras weren't working.
It just happened to be turned at the right moment.
Yeah, and it just feels to me like there's just too many, I don't know, the coincidences. There's too many things that went wrong. Now, maybe it happens every day. If someone can tell me that someone is hanging themselves in these prisons every single day because of understaffing, because the cameras don't work, because it happens every day, I'll go, okay, I believe it.
But he's the one guy.
But if he's the one guy,
then, you know, you've got probably in this moment, in this news cycle, the most high profile jailbird in the United States right there awaiting trial and he ends up dead. I mean, come on.
Yeah. No. You have to ask.
He was reportedly a canary ready to sing too. So it's, you know.
Do you want to end with the CNE very quickly?
Yeah, let's talk about John Tory and the CNE. Of course, the CNE opened today at Exhibition Place. It's traditionally the final hurrah of summer before the kids go back to school. Is it really a hurrah?
I mean, summer's... That's how they say it.
Summer's flown by. But talk about tradition. What does Mayor John Tory like about the X?
Well, my favorite memory is the rides. I think any kid, and I mentioned some of the rides that were my favorites. There was one called the Wild Mouse. I'm not sure if it exists anymore. There was the Flyer, and at the time, when you were a kid, the Flyer, even though by today's standards it would seem like a tiny roller coaster, and it was, it seemed pretty big and it seemed pretty exciting. And so I think the rides still hold a lot of appeal for people.
Now, does he think Jim Richards is ever going to play that back to him?
I know.
Mine was the Wild Mouse.
Yeah, the Wild Mouse sounds like the worst midway ride ever.
Yeah. Circa 1934.
Grab the tail. Grab the tail, kids.
CNE runs till September 2nd.
Dave Bradley, his views on the news, now on record. Thank you so much.
Well, you guys have a great weekend.
Thank you as well.